The following program is an abridged audio version of the streaming video talk show, A Wonderful Chaos. The hosts are Andy Chaliff and Bambos Dimitriou. The format is entirely casual, unscripted conversation. If you'd like to watch a live taping or participate with your comments in real time, subscribe to A Wonderful Chaos on YouTube, Facebook, Periscope, or Twitch.
I think the biggest thing is that I saw the resemblance. Like, I saw myself. People say I look like my mom and dad. We have a similar, you know, build. Nobody ever questioned that I was adopted. But to see somebody who has a similar nose, the similar eyes, it's an amazing feeling to see somebody who looks like you. It's a lot to take in. I always looked at this as icing on the cake that I had two amazing parents. This was a new chapter. This was a new relationship. There are people who are adopted who meeting a birth mom is what they need to complete their life. It was definitely a completion of my life. It wasn't the one thing that would make my life whole.
It's a wonderful chaos, beautifully random, messy and glorious.
Solo or tandem?
We work to find rest, we fight to find peace, both head and the heart.
Show.
Where the more that you learn is the less that you know. Where the wounded are healers
and the atheists pray.
It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way. It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way. It's a wonderful chaos.
Take it all in, Bamba.
I did not know that. What's his name? Kevin?
Kevin Kopjack.
Kevin Kopjack is actually related to you.
He's related.
So we're having another family reunion, guys.
Family reunion, high school reunion, college reunion. You've been through my entire history. I'm still waiting for people from your past. We had one or two people from your past to come on.
I'll just bring a few drug addicts.
Exactly. We would be good to have a show with a drug addict or two just to have that experience. Today, we are on with Kevin Kopjack. We're going to talk about him having met his birth mother at the age of 40.
And we're going to do that on
A Wonderful Chaos. One of my earliest childhood memories is seeing Kevin as a baby.
How old were you?
I don't know. Say, I would have been because... I don't know. I'm tracing him. I'm maybe 7 years ahead of him. So I was seven. Let's say, I guess about 7 years old. I remember driving up in the station wagon, the house. I can just barely kind of remember coming in the evening. And there was little Kevin.
Okay. He just came out of nowhere.
Well, he came out of the mother who he then met 40 years later. So I thought when Kevin, because Kevin published his experience of meeting his birth mom at 40 on Facebook. And it was really... from an outside perspective, quite incredible to see. And
help me understand.
Yeah.
His birth mom was your mother's sister?
Yeah, Kathy. Okay. Basically, in like my mom's sisters, because, you know, mom had a lot of sisters. I always can't remember if it was 12 or 13 brothers and sisters altogether. But let's say from those, I think there were three boys and the rest were girls.
Okay.
So Kathy was the sister that I was certainly closest with.
Okay.
Of the sisters. And his mom also.
But if there's any other sisters watching this, no offense.
They will be. But I mean, closest with them that I met her most often. She lived nearest and we had most contact.
Okay.
And she also looks most like my mom. So when I see his mom, it always makes me want to cry a bit because in some ways it's a reflection of, wow, that's what mom used to look like. And since I can see it, her face, my mom's face and her mom, in his mom, sorry,
yeah,
that it creates a real a sense of loss.
Okay.
Like I remember what my mom, so what it would have felt like if she was still there.
Kevin is born. Is he given to adoption then?
He was given to adoption. We'll get into that part of the story, but he was given to adoption and then basically he was raised by Kathy, my mom's sister. And then only at 40 did he meet his birth mom. And I think that's wild because you hear a lot about adoption and how it all kind of transpires. And the weird thing is that you always think to yourself, at what point does one think, oh, I've got to figure out or find out who they are just to understand where I came from? Or does one just say, who cares? Because I am what I am anyways, and whatever they are doesn't affect. So it would also be fun to get a little bit like understanding what made him curious enough to even search it out. you know.
Love it.
Yeah. So that's kind of it. That's the preamble. It's Friday today.
How are you, Andy Shalef?
I'm good today. I'm really good.
Are you still healthy?
I mean, as healthy as, yeah, I'm healthier than I was 2 days ago. So that's a good start. That's qualifying things. I'm not half as healthy as you. Let's put it that way.
No, quarter, Andy.
How are you, by the way?
I'm doing good.
Are you got a date coming up or something? Or what's the story with your...
Like, there's nothing I can say to this guy. That I always know that, hey, by the way, tomorrow I've got a date.
I didn't know it was tomorrow.
Will be a good COVID date. And he's like, take a walk in the park and do lots of rounds and keep your distance.
I thought it was a great idea because I thought to myself, if it's a good date, you'll do one walk in the park. You'll do a circle. If it goes any better, you'll do a second walk, right?
Or also, I'll walk her back to Central Station.
Possibly, yeah.
So, oh, yeah. So you asked me how I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm feeling pretty good.
Oh, nice.
So I've, as many of you know, I've been doing a lot of cold calling.
Mm.
And that's been, I'm on 250 cold emailing, and I've done 250 emails, something like
wow.
that. And they're all personalized. I tweak them a little bit so okay. they fit with the person.
Yeah.
So I was thinking to do automation, like uh-huh. you go woof, but then I thought that's not me.
Nor is it me, yeah.
So I've been getting more responses. I've had one job offer and one possibility, and the rest are like, I would say 20% have replied uh-huh. with a thank you.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And they've even connected with me. So it feels,
yeah,
it feels good.
That's great. You wanted to do Monday's show on cold calling or no, sales or?
Not really.
Okay. So we can move on from that.
We can move on. Nice. We can talk about your childhood.
Nice. I love it. Well, without further ado, I really feel like we need all the time for this show. So let's bring him on. Kevin.
Kevin.
Kevin Bacon. Because you do like bacon, don't you?
I do. I do. And Andy, I have to say that I've known you for 41 years and you still don't know how to pronounce my last name.
Kopchak?
It's Kopiak.
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 I've known you a long time, Andy. It's
yeah, you're one of the few people I can say I've known you since birth when I was actually that young.
Yeah, sure.
The best story that I can remember, and I asked you if it'd be okay, was when I went to your house. You were 16 years old. You weren't out of the closet yet. For anyone viewing the show, Kevin Kopiak, thank you,
Kopiak,
is gay. And of course, I was aware of this much earlier than probably a lot of the others, but I went to your house. Your mom was watching, Kathy. So hi, Kathy, out there. And she says to me, Andy, like, and she was a bit like, because it wasn't in our big family, which is very religious. We don't know how it's going to play out. There's a little bit of anxiety. She says, Andy, just before Kevin comes home, I just want to let you know that he's gay. and so for me, it was just this, like, yes, it was prodding. I was like, are you serious? I said, and this is the best. I said, I got to get out of here before you get home. She didn't know. It took her a bit of time to realize that actually,
yeah.
Like, come on, like, as if I was working selling suits. I was the only straight kid for so many years. You know how that sure. works, you know? So,
yeah, but you're right. We come, I mean, the family is very, very religious. And so it's,
yeah.
you don't know how,
and you
thank,
don't know.
God, thank God I have a family that
when you shared that you were gay, though, when did you actually identify with being gay?
Mm.
And how long did it take you to actually, like,
come out of the closet?
Guys, I need to say something.
Yeah.
It's I've known my entire life. You know, it's something that it's always been there. I identified it, you know, probably eighth grade, freshman in high school, and I came out. I went to an all Catholic, all boys Catholic high school. I knew at, you know, 15, 16. So I came out, I think, at 15, and, you know, thankfully I'm very lucky that my story is a good one. Because there's so many that are not yeah. good, that don't come out good. But I remember being in the garage, cleaning the garage at my parents' house, and my dad said, I think my dad's watching, hi, Dad. He said, "Your mom tells me that you're gay. Do you need any assistance? Do you need to talk to anybody?" And I said, "No, I'm fine." And that was literally the last of it. That was the last of it. And ever since then, it's always been about equality. It's always been about if my sister gets to bring, you know, a partner over for Thanksgiving, that I always had the opportunity to bring somebody over. There's still a learning curve. I think that comes from just being a Neary and old school. So there is some, you know, some education that is continuing in terms of proper verbiage, proper language, all that. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I've been very, very, very lucky.
Isn't it funny, though, that like as parents, we don't say, "Hey, what is your sexual preference?"
Yeah.
Are you into women? Are you into men? Like, or into both?
Exactly. Well, and that's the thing with like gender reveal parties. When a woman's pregnant, you're automatically putting those gender norms on that child. You know, blue is boy, pink is girl. And so there's a lot of that conversation happening now in terms of, you know, eliminating the gender norms, letting the child kind of figure out who and what they are.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's definitely different. I mean, growing up, it was gay, lesbian, bisexual.
Yeah, exactly.
And transgender was kind of
That was fringe. That was like, okay, we just got used to the three, gay, lesbian, bi. Now you're adding the fourth. Wow, where is this going?
Yeah. And now it's LGBTQI+.
Yeah.
And I heard pansexual.
Pansexual. It's definitely grown, and it's a good thing. It's a good thing. But there's a lot of education that has to go behind it.
I want to get back to the core of the story before we go too far. Like, first of all, let's go back. When did you realize you were adopted? Yep. What was that point for you?
Yeah. So my parents have always, so my sister and I are both adopted. My sister is adopted from another family. She was adopted 3 years before me. We were adopted through Catholic Charities in Salt Lake City, Utah, where we were both born. And so it's been part of our lives ever since my sister and I were growing up. I mean, my parents have always supplied resources, books. There was a book I remember growing up called Why Was I Adopted? That kind of told through, you know, that was written for children to explain where adoption came from. Mm-hmm. And as I was growing up in, you know, 14, 15, 16, as I was coming out, there were talk shows that always had like Jenny Jones and some of these other talk shows, Sally Jesse Raphael, that had people that were connected, you know, that, you know, we found your birth father and here he is, you know, those kind of things that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And my parents were always, again, always supplying. There was a book called You Too Can Find Anyone that they gave me. And so I've always known that I was adopted. I've always known that, I was chosen by my parents. What I didn't know was it was a private adoption. So I didn't know a lot about where, you know, who my birth mother was, who my birth father was, were they together? Are they still together? And so growing up, you know, it's one of those things where walking down the street, I would see somebody with similar features and be like, you know, could they be, you know, kind of doing the math in my head, could they be, you know? And my sister found her birth parents through 23andMe.
Oh, wow.
23andMe several years ago.
Sorry. Just to help us, because some viewers, what 23andMe? That's the genetic test that you do.
So it's a swab or spit, and you put it in a vial and you mail it out. And they, you know, 8 weeks later or whatever it is, they say here's your makeup, here's who you are, here's where you come from, and part of that is also connecting you to people who are related to you. And so
think about how many men may not have known that they had children. And through taking this swab, all of a sudden they.
Yeah. Well, I think we'll definitely get into that, I think, because of my birth father, who I also found through this process. I've never met him. We've talked it online a little bit. Uh-huh. But it's definitely a secret as far as his family knowing about me. They don't know about me. But I did 23andMe. As well, and came up with nothing.
Oh, but hold on. You did 23andMe, did you actually have sort of slight intention or definite intention to find these people?
Absolutely, yeah. Because I was told that I was Lebanese and Swedish. Uh-huh. Half that my mother was Lebanese, my father was Swedish. blonde hair, blue eyed, and that my mother again was Lebanese. And I believe the thing that I have is that she was 20 years old.
Okay.
So yes, there was always the intention of being connected. And those results came back. It turned out that I was actually not Swedish and that I was more Ashkenazi Jew.
So when you go and do the 23andMe test, when you get it, it's kind of got to be an intense moment for you.
Yeah, I think so. Because there's always that possibility that, you know, 8 weeks later, it's like, you know, here's your life.
Yeah.
That definitely. But I think, you know, that I didn't do 23andMe until about 35.
Yeah. How old are you now,
Kevin? I'm 41 now.
You're 41.
Almost 42, yeah. So it's only been about 7 years. It was kind of lackluster. I mean, yes, I figured out who I was in terms of my on my father's side, and it kind of confirmed that I was Lebanese. But other than that, I didn't really get much information I didn't get any connections. I wasn't connected to anybody. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe a fourth or fifth cousin. But at that point, it's like, who cares? You know, who cares what a fifth cousin is? And so around the same time, there's a website called adopted.com. And mm-hmm. it's a social media site. Social media is kind of a loose term, mm-hmm. where you put in what you know, and through algorithms, it connects you to people who may be connected to you.
Wow.
So I wrote out what I knew and submitted it. I got connected to one person out of all the people on there, and it was a father looking for his son who was born on the same day as me, same year as me in Utah. But within 5 minutes, we realized that it wasn't a fit.
Yeah.
And I kind of forgot about the site. I just left it there and my profile was up, and I forgot about it. I didn't think anything else about it. And at that point, I was kind of coming to the conclusion that maybe I won't find my birth mom or my birth dad. So about 3 years later, my mom bought me Ancestry, which is similar to 23andMe, but I find that it has a little bit more depth in terms of what you learn about your history. You can search archives of newspapers and death records. It's a pretty cool site. There's some really fun. I found some really fun stuff about my dad on there, and it's pretty cool. And so again, it's a swab. You send it in. You wait 8 weeks. I was waiting for the results, and it was a Tuesday night. I believe it was a Tuesday night. And I get this email from adopted.com saying, it gives me chills talking about it. It's a letter from a woman saying, your story sounds very similar to the son I gave up. And, you know, could you be my son? And I'm sitting there watching Jeopardy. I mean, as any 40-year-old gay man does on a Tuesday night, watching Jeopardy. And like, I was like running around the house going, like, what do I do? And so I called my mom, and I was like, this letter came in. I don't know what to do. I was like, are there questions I can ask that only she would know? One of them was, what's your ethnic background? And I think another one was like, what her job was. So I think we knew that as part mm-hmm. of the adoption. And so I asked her, and she answered them correctly.
And I get chills just hearing you say this. I'm getting chills at the whole process. Yeah.
It was crazy. And so I still had my Ancestry results that were outstanding. I hadn't received them. Mm. And literally 24 hours later, they came in and linked me to her.
Oh,
wow.
Yep. And then along the same lines, it linked me to my birth father as well.
Wow.
And so that, you know, that immediate, so the picture started getting emailed back and forth between me and my birth mom, Teresa. I think she's watching as well. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, Teresa.
The photos started going back and forth, and there was no denying that I was her son. I mean, she sent me photos of her brothers, and they're 100%. I mean, her brothers at my age right now are a spitting image.
Yeah, I saw the pictures you posted on Facebook, and it freaked me out. Like, wow. Yeah.
But it was funny because she sent me photos of her when she was pregnant with me. I have two half-siblings. Anna and Phil, who Phil and I look very much alike as well. We have the same, very similar features. And so seeing those kids growing up when they were younger as well, it was exciting. It was crazy.
when that happens, tell me what the feeling is like. Like, tell me really, what is it that goes on inside of you when this moment that you didn't know if it was going to happen or not happen, it happens. So what happens to you?
Yeah, it's a mix of emotions. It's excitement. It's a major chapter that's opened and closed. I mean, it's like 40 years of not knowing that chapter closes and this whole other chapter opens. It's a whirlwind. It's terrifying. It's exciting. It's a lot to take in. It's a lot to come to terms with. Hearing the stories, you know, it's the story of my birth mom and why she gave me up. It's tragic and it's beautiful. I mean, the fact that she gave me up, it speaks volumes. There was so much love for me that she made the ultimate sacrifice. I mean, that's a huge thing. I don't know if I could do that. I mean, you look at, you know, adopting a cat and like having to like give it up or, you know, give it away or something because you're moving. And that's a huge thing. It's emotionally traumatizing. So I think for me and for her, I think for 40 years, she probably had this huge weight on her and this huge, I don't want to say regret, but this there was always something that was there. And I think that for both of us, it lifted this huge weight off our shoulders.
Like since I have a strong empathetic response, often when someone shares a story with me, I'll kind of have a connection to where I feel how it feels inside of me.
Yeah.
So you haven't shared this yet, but I feel when I have this moment, like all confusion, like go to my frontal lobe. Like, what does this mean? I don't know. Like, how does it impact? I see a beautiful question came in from Ronnie right now. Like one of the questions was like, how was it for your mom when you found your birth parents? Like how, like all of that, like how was that for her even?
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that that's always been kind of top of mind for me when, you know, searching over the years or not actively searching, but if the time came when I actually did meet my birth parents, that my mom and dad, so when I say mom and dad, that's my adoptive parents and then biological, you know, my bio mom, bio dad are my biological parents. Mm. I always wanted to make sure that my mom and dad were taken care of, that they obviously were first and foremost the most important people in my life. They still are. I had to pay attention to that, to be sympathetic to that. I know how my mom gets. I know that, I mean, she's a Neary. You know how the Nearies are. There was always this reassurance that, no, I wasn't going to leave her. No, I wasn't going to, you know, spend Thanksgiving and do Christmas and leave the Kopiak family if that time came when I met my birth parents. You know, my birth parents. So it was just a lot of reassurance. You know, it was a lot of reassurance. You know, when it was confirmed, my mom jokingly was like, she doesn't get Thanksgiving. She doesn't get Easter. She doesn't, you know, it's like all the – laying down the law.
I love it. Sounds like a true Neary. That's great.
What I can and can't do. My mom was 100% supportive. She flew in when I, my birth mom and her family came to San Francisco about, I would say probably 8 months after I met them. So last year, and I met them for the first time, they came to San Francisco and my mom flew out for it. And it was beautiful. The first thing that I did was I had lunch, just me and Teresa, just to have a formal introduction with me and her. And then we brought the her family in.
So help me. So like, let's take that moment. Yep. So this is your mom.
Yeah.
Birth mom. You haven't seen her. You're 40 years old. And now you meet for the, like, take me back to that moment. How, like, what happens then?
Yeah. They were staying at a hotel in downtown San Francisco and I drove down there. And the reunion happened in the lobby of this intercontinental hotel.
But give me the, are you sweating? Are you
100% nervous. Cause it was, just, remember, it was just me at this point and all, you know, it was my birth mom and her two kids and her husband, Dave. And yeah, it was beautiful. I mean, it was a beautiful moment. It was a lot of hugging. It was a lot of nerves, anxiety. And I'm an anxious person already. So like, you know, I get into my head and then I go down that spiral, you know. Yeah, it was really beautiful. We took photos and
did you feel like, because this is something I don't know. So it's curious for me. like the fact that she is your birth mom, right?
Yep.
It's a psychological in your brain. Like, this is the woman who gave birth to me. So yeah. When you meet and connect with her for the first time, like, how does it feel for you? Because in some ways you don't know this woman at all. And yet she's in a weird way, so critical to your life.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing is that I saw the resemblance. Like, I saw myself. And that's for the first time in 40 years. I mean, people say I look like my mom and dad. We have a similar, you know, we're built, we're thicker people. Nobody ever questioned that I was adopted. Unlike my sister, who's blonde hair, blue eyed, and looks nothing like my, you know, my mom, dad, and I. But to see somebody who has a similar nose, the similar eyes, it's an amazing feeling to see somebody who looks like you.
Fuck.
But yeah, it's a whirlwind. It's a lot to take in. One thing that I always, my one rule was that, or not one rule, my one piece of advice to myself was I always held the reins. And so if it was too much, I was always able to take a step back and say, okay, let's work down a little bit. Because at that time, photos were coming in and conversations, and there was a lot to take in. 40 years of life to take in. And so I always felt like I was in control.
Yeah.
I always looked at this as icing on the cake that I had two amazing parents who are still married, who are still, I talk to every day. Mm. And so this was icing on the cake for me. This was a new chapter. This was a new relationship. There are people who are adopted who meeting a birth mom is what they need to complete their life.
Yeah.
And it was definitely a completion of my life. It wasn't the one thing that would make my life whole. No. It's been an amazing experience. I have loved every minute of it. But there are people who this is the one thing.
Yeah, I'm hearing the difference is that someone needs it in order to feel like their life is complete. You just had it as an extension.
Correct.
Kevin, what kind of questions did you have like your whole life that when you had the opportunity, what was really the thing that you needed to ask, which was scary just to ground yourself?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, the big thing was my health, because, you know, 40 years of going to the doctor, the number first question is, you know, do you have, does cancer run your family? Does this run your family? And I never knew. It doesn't make sense to say what my adoptive parent, whether it ran their family, because I wasn't blood related. So I never knew how to answer that. You know, I would always say, I'm adopted, I don't know. Wow. And so that was a huge piece for me, was learning about, were there any diseases that ran in the family? And that was one of the key reasons why I also reached out to my birth father. Long story short, he is not interested in having a relationship with me. He has a family. The family doesn't know. Now they do. No, I'm just kidding.
Surprise, here we are. So, I mean, taking that part of your story, if I fill in the blanks, it sounds like basically he had a relationship with your birth mom. That didn't quite work out, which is probably the reason why she needed to then have you raised by another family.
In Salt Lake City, there's a tight Lebanese community there, Lebanese Catholic community there. And it was frowned upon. I from what I understand, a one night thing. You know, I think that she was kind of forced to give me up. You know, I think she had 5 minutes with me after giving birth, and they kind of took me away.
I've got a great question from Ronnie. She says, do you think you would have turned out gay if you had been with your birth mom and not your other mom?
That's not what she's asking.
She says, how do you?
I think my life.
I like that. her real question before I translated it was, how do you experience nature versus nurture? This is fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, yes, I would have been gay. and just quickly, the gay thing for me, as I mentioned to you before we started, was that was a non-negotiable thing for me. You know, if it was a problem for me being gay with this new family that I've, you know, have found, It was non-negotiable.
How did that come out, by the way, just to get into that? Because it's now the second time in your life you've had to reveal to someone who was in a role of a parenting role that you were. So how was it? Because in a weird way, you had to come out of the closet twice now.
It was absolutely a second coming out. It was the first conversation. So our first conversation was supposed to happen after work one night. Our first phone conversation after work one night. I was heading home. I was going to have dinner, delivered, and it was going to be like, I was going to be cozy, and then something happened at work and I had to stay at work. And so this first conversation happened in my office in downtown San Francisco. It's like noise everywhere. So it wasn't the most ideal, but it was one of the first things that I said. I said, I'm gay. And she said, that's great. but had that conversation not gone that way, it's something that is so important in my life, me being gay and the acceptance that comes with it, we would not be where we are today with our relationship, just because I'm not a fan of the "we love you but" scenario.
Yeah, of course,
a lot of family.
Yeah, Kevin Bulelang, who's one of our regulars, he says, you have your attitude is great.
Thank you.
And behind the scenes, I told you, I don't remember what I said something to you, like my first impression, like, you have such a beautiful energy.
Mm. Thank you.
And in your eyes, I can connect to your eyes because I have it too, like vulnerability, which is there.
Yeah.
And I can't deny that you're speaking to so much. And before, when I said slow down from it, it's because I was going to start crying for you.
So many,
I couldn't catch up. And somewhere, I think even Andy was trying to bring you into the vulnerability.
Oh, I see him talking the story, because if he goes into the emotion, he's going to be crying on the show.
I still get teary eyed talking. I get teary eyed talking about. I've had the crying.
We're not going to make you cry. Don't worry. Now, there's something which I want to ask. Mm. So when I was growing up, I kind of had a very hard childhood, and that childhood kind of, I never really grounded like in safety and feeling that I belonged. I always felt that I had to earn my right to live in a way. And knowing that you have been adopted, like somewhere in there as a child, you can have a story like, oh, I was not wanted.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, how did you live that chapter of your life, and how has it changed since meeting your biological mama?
Sure. The reason I'm laughing is because growing up, one of my ongoing jokes was like, my mom didn't love me enough, so she had to give me up for adoption. Like, that was like my Andy Shaliff moment of making people feel like awkward and uncomfortable. And
that was unloved. And
the people I say to are like, oh, like, they're super awkward. They don't know how to respond to it. But no, like I, there was never a moment of not feeling wanted and not feeling accepted, not feeling that I belonged to, to something, to or a family, or that my adoptive parents were simply doing, they wanted kids. And we've always had a deep connection in our family. Always shared everything with my mom and my dad. I mean, sometimes probably too much, too much sharing. But I've never felt disconnected from the world, from the family. And I think going back to people who do, like we were talking about earlier, that the people that do find their birth parents, and that is the need, the thing that they need, that those people have that constant feeling of disconnection their entire life. And I've never, for whatever reason it is, that their parents were never, lovey-dovey, or never felt, or that they have siblings, that one sibling that was a natural from the parent, and the other one that was adopted, that connection that could be off a little bit. I've never had, my sister and I were both adopted, so we've always had that connection. She and I have, and we're very close as well.
You're gonna laugh. I never knew your sister was adopted till just now.
Shut up.
I swear to you, I did not know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, funny.
Yeah, she's.
You want to bring her on the show?
Yeah, bring her on the show. the big secret.
Kevin, I think your parents did an amazing job. Like, you're so congruent. You're so celebrating everything. No heaviness in your voice.
No.
It's just, like, it's such a pure joy to spend the last 40 minutes with you.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, I'm super passionate about talking about this. I mean, adoption is obviously a huge part of my life. My parents have shaped me to be the person I am today. And I'm forever grateful for that. Things could have turned out differently. I think often about what my life would have been, in Utah, had I stayed there, with my birth mom. And I think I would have been a different person. That's not a slam or anything. I just would have been a different person. I don't know if my love of musical theater and the arts would have been out there. Would have come out.
Would have been nurtured as much in that environment.
Correct. I mean, I've always been a musical person, and my parents gave me guitar lessons when I was younger, and I sang. And they took me to the theater, and in high school, my dad took me to New York several times to see shows. So I don't know. It's not fair, and I don't know what
life would look like. Yeah,
correct. But I often think about it.
Did you have? That's what I was wondering. And did you it might not be easy because everything is a presumption. But did you have you mentioned a little bit in that way? Did you feel like, wow, my life would have been a lot different if I was not born? Did you feel into that a lot?
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely felt my life would have been different. Again, would have been worse. It would have been, just would have been different. I went to Utah and met the rest of them, the
I'm
family.
Trying to see what's behind him.
The baby. There's me as a baby with a little bikini on.
No, just that painting also would not be part of your life. If
Oh, this one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my favorite art.
Your biological papa, so now he's kind of said, I don't want anything to do with you. How did that land for you?
Yeah. Well,
and have you made peace with that? Or was it something you had to make peace
with? Well, I mean, let's get something clear, by the way. It's a fucking intense situation.
Yeah.
Just your short description of it. do you get the dynamic?
Yeah.
It's intense.
Yeah. Here's where I got closure with it.
Okay.
I, as I said earlier, I always had the reins in terms of with my birth mom, in terms of how much I wanted to take in. If it was too much, I could back. With my birth father, he always felt from the emails that I sent him that he was the one in control. And that didn't go over well with me because this was my story. This is not his story. So I wrote to him a couple times. And then on Ancestry, I got an email from his sister, so my biological aunt, saying, "Who are you? Why are we so closely related?" And so I pride myself on the fact that I'm courteous, that I don't throw people under the bus. I could have easily written back and said, "Well, your brother,
this you're my aunt. Hi, aunt."
Correct.
Yeah.
And so as a courtesy, I wrote to him and said, "Hey, just want to let you know that this happened. How would you like me to respond?" Something I definitely did not have to do. And he came back with a response that was like, "If you say something, it will ruin my entire life, my entire family, everything that I built."
Wow.
Which is such a dick of an answer.
Let's just say you're going to ruin everything because everything was built on a lie.
Exactly. You're going to expose my lie to the world. What am I going to do then? Yeah.
And so, I left them alone for several months. And it wasn't until recently where I was like, "Listen, this is my story. This is my life. You don't get to tell me, you don't get to dictate who I get to talk to, who I don't say your story, who I don't break your lie to." And so I wrote to him and I said, "Listen, I have to tell you that, growing up, as I told you guys earlier, walking down the street and seeing somebody with a similar feature, I often thought, could this be my birth father?" And I basically was just like, am I allowed to swear? Am I allowed to swear?
Obviously.
Of course.
That I was like, "You basically kind of shit on my story because you were trying to take control of it." And I said, I just want to let you know that this is my story. And you don't have to be a part of my life, but you have to understand that I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah.
You will always know that I'm around." And so he wrote back. He actually wrote back a very nice answer. And he apologized. He said that he was a coward. He gave me the opportunity to ask him anything that I wanted. He said, "I'm always around if you want to ask questions." And so I asked him, my only question was the health question. And what, you know, did anything run in the family? And so he answered it. And that was kind of me taking back my story.
Nice.
Because, you know, it's very much like, and this is kind of like a apples and oranges comparison, but it's kind of like sexual assault victims who take their story back, or people who are threatened with their naked photos. You know, their naked photos get threatened and they post them themselves because they're taking their story back.
Well, it's almost like what it sounded like is that he was making himself into the victim, as if you were terrorizing him by, as opposed to coming out like I would have thought genuinely, saying, listen, my life has been a bit of a lie, and I'd appreciate if you didn't. Like, that would be a whole different way of interacting with you.
Absolutely. I mean, one huge thing in my life is accountability. And if you can't be accountable, I don't need him in my life. I have an amazing father. I'm not looking for a father figure. And I made that very clear from day one when I wrote to him. I said, listen, I'm not looking for a father figure. I just want to let you know that this I'm your son. And he immediately got defensive over it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can imagine, of course he'd get defensive over it because he'd been living a lie for the last 40 years, you know?
But what person who has a son out there joins Ancestry?
I know, but he didn't, did he? He was his, oh, he did.
I was connected to him through Ancestry.
Oh, wow. Amazing. So
and you can't take the profile down.
No, it's still there. It's still there.
Oh, Matt, amazing. Yeah, that wasn't the smartest move. Let's agree on that. If you want to keep like off the radar, don't put yourself on the radar. He probably got it as a gift, by the way. He didn't necessarily know what he was getting himself into.
But what happened? I mean, so I have half siblings on his side as well. I'm like, what happens if his half siblings take the test? I mean, my half siblings, his daughters take the test, or his wife, or, you know, something. I guess the wife wouldn't connect to me, but his children would. So
pretty much he's going to spend the rest of his life on that edge.
Yeah, he'll live on that little edge for a long time because he hadn't actually outed himself.
Because I could easily ruin his life. I'm not going to. I don't want to. That's not my intention. I could easily write to his sister and say, I'm your nephew.
No, you wouldn't do that.
Obviously. No, I wouldn't say that. The word ruin his life. I think he's done a good job by himself.
Yeah, you wouldn't be ruining anything.
You wouldn't be ruining anything. It's really ruined.
I think this would be the, you know, kind of the final straw for him. I mean,
I kind of see the film where like it's a cross country journey, you know, and then there's that one meeting at the door. Yeah. Who are you? Yeah. He pushes you outside so you can have your talk. What are you doing here?
Do you have him in the back? Is he coming out?
Here he is. God, I can't even speak.
1 second, everybody.
Thank you, Bambos.
Have some tea, Andy.
Bolalong says again,
I'm a big fan of Ancestry, irrespective of what it may reveal.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, it's one of those things, again, like we were talking about with 23andMe, where you just get your results. They just come in. And had my birth mother, Teresa, not written to me the night before, that would have been the first time that I would have known that she was out there, or that I was connected to her. So that it could be a scary thing to get that immediate change of life. Immediately. Yeah. Whole nother family. Whole nother history, whole nother story.
Yeah, and that's kind of interesting because like one of those jokes, those well-worn jokes that I'll always do whenever you're like asked, do you have any children? And I'll always say, not as far as I know. Yeah. But actually with Ancestry, you really will figure that out pretty quick.
Oh, I'm sure that people's lives have been ruined through that. I mean, it's
how but you can only find it out if
you take the test, yeah.
But also if they take the test.
Yeah. Correct. Both of you have to, or an intermediary who then connects you into it. So it's a little bit of a network. Once you hit the network.
Because I've been connected to my birth mom, my birth dad, my birth aunt on my dad's side, my birth aunt on my mom's side, my birth mom's children, Phil and Anna, and a couple other people. And all through Ancestry.
How was it when your birth mom and your mom met? Like, how was that?
It was beautiful. I mean, it was really one of those picture perfect moments. I mean, it was the embrace and the hugging and the crying and the thank yous, the gratitude on both sides. I mean, it was, you know, my mom thanking her for allowing her to have children, and my birth mom thanking her for taking care of her child. And so it was really beautiful. We had a really great weekend. I have this really amazing photo of them two hugging. That's super powerful. Like, it's a really powerful photo for me. It was amazing.
Yeah. Like, I had the experience. My dad left when I was 15, and I found him when I was 30, and then he died 2 months later.
Oh, wow.
And then I went to his funeral. So I flew back to Cyprus. Because I was, his sister kind of was very close to me when I was growing up.
Yeah.
So I went there, and at his funeral, I discovered I had 3 brothers and sisters from one woman from Africa and a Filipino little brother. So all of a sudden I'm there, and it's a reunion instead of a funeral. Yeah. And I didn't really know my father. I just went and I saw this body. I started to hear stories about him. Like, the whole family didn't recognize me at the funeral, because when my dad left, I was not allowed to see them anymore.
Wow. And
so when I showed up at the funeral and I had to go and give my condolences, a man says to me, "Who are you?" And then my aunt said, "It's his son." So it was really emotional, because all of a sudden they were trying to put me in that line.
Yeah.
But I discovered so much about my father, like the good stuff that I never really heard about him.
Sure.
And I'm wondering, what were some of the stories that you got when you met your family just now?
Yeah. I mean, one of the biggest things that kind of made the most sense was my birth mom and her family. They're a musical family, which is like exactly what I am. I mean, I grew up with music and theater and singing and all that. And they're a musical family. They perform in a Lebanese family band at the Lebanese festival in Utah. And so that was like the biggest, probably one of the biggest like moments for me, just because it made sense. It was like the perfect, you know, the missing piece was kind of like that musical. That's where I got it from.
It's in your DNA.
It's in my DNA. Yeah. And so, you know, but hearing stories about, growing up, my mom growing up, my birth mom growing up, were exciting and interesting. But the music part of it was the one that kind of stuck with me the most. And anybody I tell the story to, they're like, "Oh my God, of course they're a musical family." Like, it's what you do. It's what you've dedicated your entire life to are the arts.
Were there any behaviors that you exhibit that you discovered that parts of your biological family also exhibit? You're like, "Oh my God, you do that too."
Like, did anyone have a similar laugh to yours or anything where you're like, "Wow, we really are similar in that way"?
Not that I've discovered. I think the only thing like with my birth uncles are that we just have the same, we have the same face, we have the same stature.
And
we're
smile?
Both. And smile.
And Bambi eyes?
But yeah, I mean, the physical part of it was the most shocking.
Wow.
I only met them for 2 days, so it wasn't enough to kind of really see the mannerisms in play. But I was going to say that one of the proudest things about all of this I've come out is that I have friends that are adopted, friends who are scared to search for their birth parents for one reason or another. And so I remember having dinner with one of my buddies, and I told him about adopted.com. He's like, I kind of want to meet my birth mom. I kind of don't. And so we went on. I was like, "Well, let's do it together." So we're sitting in this Mexican restaurant, and we sign up for adopted.com. And seriously, within 2 minutes, it linked him to his birth mom.
No.
Yeah. And I'm glad I was there with him. Again, it's that thing where it's like this immediate response, kind of like
that's what I meant earlier, though. Were you alone when you received the news? Because it can be very emotional.
Yeah, I was alone for me.
Wow.
I wanted to do it with my buddy because I knew like what that feeling is like, and so I wanted to be there.
Hold on, so you're just sitting at a Mexican restaurant having chips and salsa, filling in the website.
Yep.
Now, does he want to fill in the website, or are you saying, "No, we got to do this"?
He was on the fence, and me talking about my experience convinced him to do it.
So you fill it in, and while at the table, you get the connection.
100% connection. So he wrote to her, she wrote back, and now they have this great relationship together as well. And also, like another friend of mine, a lifelong family friend, her wife, same story, that she was always kind of on the fence, and my story just kind of convinced her to move forward. I think the positive aspect of my story is what's has made people want to pursue it. Because you hear bad stories about adoption. I have an old roommate who was adopted, and when he met his birth mom, all she wanted was money.
Ugh.
You know, so there's some bad stories out there, but I think mine definitely was a very positive experience.
I have to say, when I found my dad, he was the same. He wanted money. And for the 2 months that before he died, he called me, I think every other week, asking for money.
Isn't that, it's crazy. That's mind blowing to me. Like, it's crazy to me. Yeah. But yeah, so there are bad experiences. I have a friend who just went through the adoption process. On the other end, she was looking to adopt, and they were getting super close to the final birth, and the mother pulled out. And there are some negative stories that come out of it.
Yeah.
I'm very lucky that mine was so positive. You know, with the exception of my birth dad, but even that, I kind of reclaimed my. This is my story.
I mean, there's going to be part of the story you don't know when you get involved, because it's like a little bit of a murder mystery. Like, what's the reason why this all transpired? Right.
Yeah. And we're still learning about each other. We're still learning about who we are and who, you know, our backstories. And so I'm sure there will be moments where things aren't perfect.
Have you ever spent a holiday with the adopted family?
With my birth family?
Yeah.
I haven't done a holiday. It was right around July 4th when I went to
I just like Kathy on the line, like, hey, I'm not losing my holidays, you know? Like, those are my holidays. I mean, just for the record, Bambo, so you know, like, Kathy, like, she, like, there's some people that celebrate. She is the most exaggerated session of celebration. So she'll make decorations for the entire house with a glue gun. Like, I learned what a glue gun meant from his mom.
Yeah. These are her things right here.
Everything you're looking in the back is what she's made, right?
Yeah, like that elephant right there, she made.
Yeah.
She's very arts and craft. That's a gourd that she's done.
And she's watching this right now.
Of course she is.
Of course she is. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we're over our hour.
That was a blast.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you. Thank you
for having me. Yeah.
Love you. Bye. That was nice.
Mm.
Yeah, I was really excited about that show.
Yeah, now I understand why.
Yeah.
You didn't reveal that part.
Well, I mean, the story alone was interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah, but still, the fact that it's family.
Okay, it adds another dimension for you.
Yeah.
I've had a few, you know, I had a funny story of somebody who I know in Amsterdam. They heard a whiff of a rumor that they had a sister that didn't even know that they had the same father. So he, without saying anything, invited this person out for dinner. And then sort of didn't tell her that they were brother and sister, but just to meet randomly. Says, hey, our parents are friends. Why don't we meet? And I mean, it was kind of obvious on some level because she had Asian characteristics and her parents weren't Asian. So there must have been some doubt. But she found out that they were brother and sister.
Wow.
And that was such a big deal for her that it created trauma in the family. So these stories of not knowing even who your real mother or father was, because, you know, in this case, it was someone who was unaware of that, like that's out there.
Yeah.
It's not so strange for this to happen. Can you imagine? You're 50 years old and you realize for the first time that your father or mother isn't really your father or mother. That's got to be a crazy realization.
I need to sit with that.
You know, all the ideas you had of yourself, whatever the projections were that you assumed, and then all of a sudden realizing that whatever your foundation is just isn't there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. So
I don't have everything on.
Yeah. Well, next week we've got five more shows. That's what we know. Every day, 5 o'clock.
Every day, guys, we're here.
We decided to ask people, if you're watching, please like and follow us. We've only done 134 shows and never asked anyone to like it. Like, I watch other videos. I'm like, everyone at the end of their show says, hey, like and follow us.
And something that you guys might not be aware, we have a professional who is editing these videos and is making a podcast out of it.
Yeah, so he's literally cuts out anything that isn't interesting, at least from his perspective, into a 45-minute segment. So it's really all of these shows condensed into the best parts.
Yeah.
And
you can listen to it on Spotify, iTunes, iPod, etc. Yeah. So Andy,
Dambos.
Say have a nice weekend, Andy.
Have a nice weekend, Andy.
and we're gonna see you next week
on A Wonderful Chaos.
Always
like it that way.
It's a wonderful chaos.
We like it that way.